Right.
And a continuation visit with Leslie this Sunday at supper time, the 26th of December, 71. Channel 2 right. And a continuation visit with Leslie this Sunday at supper time, the 26th of December, 71.
In science, I just couldn't see how he would pursue that angle because it is so.
I know he was here one night when he left the talk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he can tell tales.
And his, that particular the fact he was on was on this. doctors had to have the test before they could treat. They wouldn't even look at the patient; they just look at the chart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no way to do it. You're not sick. The chart said you're not.
I hope the chart isn't normal.
So he might be a good doctor, really, in a way. He has, he can sort of figure things out.
Yes,
I mean, his mother asked him questions the other day. I was, he's thinking in terms, you know, that now he thinks he's not writing. He gave us some very good things to do. Yeah, I was sick.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he has that wonderful sort of figure it out type of mind.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not terribly good at languages and Latin and things like that require a lot of memory work. And, but whenever it was something that required intelligence, you know, figuring something out, he was the brightest one by far in our group. There was no one that could come close to it. And solving problems, he was. I've often wondered if he shouldn't have been an inventor or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, theoretical aspect.
His map. Because they would say to him about Harvard, you know, well, you don't have to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even the professors would say, I think maybe literature is your field,
mm-hmm.
and not medicine. You know, you just have to be more dedicated than you seem to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he had that strong determination to go or pop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. He wouldn't offer it.
Mm. I wonder if history of science wouldn't have been a good bet for him.
But as I understand from his mother, this is a field, what he's in now is something that he can see.
Mm-hmm.
And step in.
Mm-hmm.
With
mm-hmm. Well, radiology is good for us.
And, yes.
Radiology is more. Ought to be another course.
Yeah.
For goodness sakes.
Oh,
I don't believe so. Thank you.
I could do a little coffee if I had it.
All right.
These things I say, I didn't think about that comes out of Emerson. See, the conformity is he what he what he does in the self-reliance. He calls it self-reliance. He's using Franklin, Paul Richard, as a springboard,
mm-hmm.
and it's his undoing. They read him as if it's Paul Richard. So he's lost, actually. No one gets Emerson. What he's saying is, to start with, the basis of the individual is perception. He's perceptive. That light that flashes across the inner mind. The other day, I read some verses the other day written by an eminent painter who was original, not conventional. And you see, he goes on point by point, uses a different word all the time. Then he's just trying to make his meaning clear, except that he doesn't know what his meaning is. You can't work on the assumption, you see, that any writer knows what the hell he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's a narrative, he can do it, you see. But if it's some sort of thought, he don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, you see, when he gets through, he still don't know. And unless you take a position of doubt, there's no damn use of reading it. You see, it's all misconception. Well, then he says, he tries to tell you the basis of it, and then he tells you what it's not. And he gets it from society, conformity. Conformity is the enemy of those things. Society, as conformity, is the enemy of that, see? In that it wears you out, dries you up. It doesn't allow you to be perceptive. And then consistency. Then he has other points. And then in the American Scholar, he says, education of the scholar, how is it, you see, this person he's talking about, how is it he ever gets going? Well, you see, he's got that thing on nature. Well, the best thing to do when you get to nature and Emerson is just skip it, because it's an abstraction that just gets in his way. And the other is books or the past or whatever he calls it. But only one thing he says in that that's worthwhile is to Emerson, at least to the scholar, the books that are important to the scholar are those that set the hearts of youth on fire.
Mm-hmm.
You see, it's the same thing as he started with back yonder. It's the thing that is perceptive.
Mm-hmm.
Enables a person, you see, to have those glimpses. And then the nature and books, and what else is there?
Past.
And the past, that's the book. Yeah. Well, anyhow, conformity, that's what I was going to say to you. Conformity. Now you see, I just use Emerson. I just adapt him. Conformity, you see, as he sees it, nonconformity is what he suggests to see. But it's awfully you can't get to his meaning because he doesn't nonconform.
Mm-hmm.
He wears black clothes like an old preacher, you see, and white shirts, and he just is proper for him. See, there's no nonconformity in my sense of Emerson. So you see, it has to be something else. The nonconformity in him is mental.
Mm-hmm.
You cut through conformity and society, otherwise you're not mental. Now you extend that, you see, to all the institutions. You cut through all the institutions. All of them. You see, the institution itself is just like the church. The preacher wants you to get you there for 11 o'clock hour. Next thing, he wants to get you there for the 6 o'clock hour. You see, all he's doing is extending the institution. He's not giving you anymore. He just the institution is just
encroaching on the individual more
right.
And more. Yeah.
That's right. And that's what you get in all institutions, including yours.
Oh, yes.
Mine, and all our institutions. Well, that's not my thought. That's just...
And we were thinking the other day, as some of these students, particularly these students, just... Well, we think back to one of the marriage students. She, when 4:30 comes, she has to drop everything and go put supper on the table.
For
her husband. Yeah. Well, anyway, and if it's not that, it's something else, you see. Not just for her, but the others. And it just occurred to Guy the other day that I never have lived around a clock.
They never did.
I never have.
Never did.
You know, it's the pursuit of what I'm doing. It just,
you
know.
You were right, sure. Uh-huh. They in them. And I don't understand that, Leslie.
No.
They're bright people. And they're still dominated, you see, by that little, little pitiful view of the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It diminishes
the
it does, doesn't it? One would think that one could come home late, for example, and the other partner would understand that.
come home any damn time you want to.
Yes. I mean, somehow you'd overlap enough that you'd have a marriage if you had a marriage to begin with.
Oh, that you respect.
Well, that's you see how it goes. And very simple thing.
That's one institution that I'm not so eager for right now. I like to travel too much, and you know, I wonder when I would practice the piano if I had a wife. I don't think they'd be coming for everything. I really don't know what I would do if I had a wife. It would just be, it's just incomprehensible to me now. Because I don't have a minute to spare.
What would you do? She'd got to be in the way, wouldn't you?
See, it's not for you. You need a maid.
That's what I often said to my colleagues when they said, why don't you get married like us, you know? The implication being that the only reason why you would get married would be so you wouldn't have to go to the food store. And I think that shows something about their mentality about marriage. I don't think the women's lib movement has hit them yet. But it's beginning to, because I've noticed there's some days when they don't show up around there, when they don't have any classes, and that's the days when they have to be home, and they have to watch the children, and they have to go to the food store while she's back in graduate school or something like that, and decided to go back to school. So it's hitting them gradually. But. I think it is. But I just can't imagine ever getting married just so that, you know, you could deduct another $600 and have someone to go to the grocery store. And that's a horrible way of thinking about it. I can't see going together either. That's even more horrible, these young graduate couples, you know. Oh, should we get some of this? I think you'd just have to draw a lot. So. Or you'd have to get a maid. You definitely have to have a maid if you had two.
Who would you run around with in Europe, Leslie?
In Europe?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't really run around with anybody. I mean, who were my friends? Is that what you mean?
I don't know.
I had a couple very close friends when I was in Athens at the school.
Your age?
They were my age. They were,
Well, you see, you can't learn from people your age.
I'm not so sure about that, but I suppose it's mostly that's true. But you can sometimes enter into learning experiences with another person of your own age involving other people that it would be harder to get in on if you were all alone, if you know what I mean. Well, this proved to be the case in Greece, where it was very easy for the two of us to go visit this Greek family, for example. See, we didn't know Greek too well.
Yeah.
And they didn't know English at all.
That's right.
And if we'd been all alone,
it
would have been awfully hard. And this way, you know, one could sort of keep the ball going while the other one is exhausted. Or the topic of conversation has become so dull or, you know, sounds incomprehensible to us. I mean, the very thing they were talking about.
It's amazing to have a mind, isn't it?
Yeah. Let me tell you, we've got those numbers of the countryside. Some of my friends, they're just my friends, that's all the ones. A lot of times, we're talking to them. And you know, they get tired talking to Faye and me.
It's
and
the same thing. That's right.
If you can shift the audience just a little bit,
mm-hmm.
And you know what, you could be here because you're intelligent and you know they know you're listening,
mm-hmm.
And you don't have to open your mouth,
mm-hmm.
And it'll be a wholly different view they take. They do the whole talking. It's all sustained.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean they talk an hour at a time, but they talk, you know, they carry the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ask them questions. You see, in this world, they don't go by questions. They don't ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ask them questions. They never ask me how many counts of God. If they want to know, they'll come up, you see. And I've never had a member of my class come out yet, but what he didn't ask me, sooner or later, how many cows I had and how many acres I had.
Well, at least I haven't asked about the acres. But
no.
Both questions are very Homeric. Because you wouldn't want to spend too much time with a man until you knew just how many he had of either one, how many daughters he had, too, probably. How much gold in the cellar.
Yeah, but he didn't ask questions. No, there's two worlds over there on the campus. The people who maintain the place, the maintenance people, driver tractors and all, you see, men of experience who never ask questions, and then the academic people, including the students, you see, who think you can find out anything if you just ask a question.
Mm.
And actually, it's the least, most helpless tool there is.
That reminds me of so much of our American educational experience is based right on that. You know, you remember when you were in high school and you would read a story like The Gold Bug by Edgar Allan Poe or something like that, and there'd always be a list of questions after things to think about and discuss, and they always absolutely spoiled the story. I mean, there were always things that you didn't really want to talk about or things that seemed self-evident, or sometimes the first one would be think up and write down questions about things to discuss in The Gold Bug. You know? So the whole system is to encourage you to ask the right questions. There must be many things you could read and enjoy without asking any questions. Oh,
well, you see, you just work into it. And it's, he ought to be in on this little thing.
We ought to quit running
this.
On off to Greece. He might learn something.
Yeah, that's the counter, you see.
We just can't
I see Miss Daisy came up here. We got her up here right after she spent that long Thanksgiving weekend with her sister.
Mm-hmm.
Her sister's family down in Plant City. And, I didn't know what to say. So what you do, you just and questions won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The questions are all leading.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say now, Miss Daisy, how about your sister? What's
how
she got on
the
goal?
All,
huh?
How are they all down there,
yeah.
Plant City?
Yeah. But you see, the thing that came out was that this boy, Robert, her sister's boy, Robert, she raised him. Miss Daisy and her mother raised Robert.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, what's her name down there? Her sister's boy. But they raised him. Well, I thought that was all right. But, you see, you wouldn't say, how come Stacey Nicole raised the boy? But you got to, it's a clue.
Mm-hmm.
You never saw, you just never saw too much your sister anyhow, did you? All right, sir? She says, now, the thing of it is, and once she starts like that, you know she's going to tell you the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to tell you things you never get with questions.
Mm-hmm.
likewise her sister married a seasoned man.
Mm-hmm.
He followed the season.
Mm-hmm.
And Miss Daisy then followed the season. Nothing like this happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she told him he was a seasoned man. Well, he was mean. When he went off, he'd take her, Lucy, wherever he
was. Lucy.
And Lucy didn't want to follow. And you see, it was another world. And the thing of it is to get into it, you can't get into it with questions.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get into anything worthwhile with questions. They simply don't. And Miss Daisy knows everything. Let me tell you. She like Faulkner, she don't know what generation she's talking about. She got this stove that granddaddy got her husband. I say, Miss Daisy, you can just cook anything on that. And I guess your mama cooked her bread on the same stove. She sort of shook her head. And she was right there. And she says, no, my mama never had a stove. Picked it right up, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Just went into that world. She cooked in a fireplace.
Mm-hmm.
And their mentality, it's so easy on you. Mm-hmm. I associate with them for a while, and it gets to be absolutely painful for me to go to office.
Sometimes
in
a block of time,
we'll
let him listen to Miss Daisy.
Hmm.
He'll quit reading, huh?
Activities
and
a
whole bunch.
We'll let him, yeah, Miss Daisy,
and
that goose.
Yes, I, yeah.
I heard the goose.
You haven't seen the goose through her eyes, though.
Oh,
I think I have heard one of her tapes, but evidently, well, I may have spoken to her one time when a guy was in the hospital and she was sitting out on the front porch and I asked if you were home and she explained that he was in the hospital. I never would have known at that time, I don't think, because I don't believe the witnesses knew about it. That time when he had his sudden severe illness. But I have heard the tape of her when she was, something about having the wiring fixed, wasn't it? People drove up in a red truck and they charged her so much.
No, that's Miss Liza.
Oh,
Liza.
I see.
No, you've not heard Daisy. Daisy's voice is curing me.
Mm-hmm.
She has also a natural sense of cadence and balance.
Mm-hmm.
She'll balance. You can't quote it. You can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't. It has to be her words. I like the way I've made. You know,
mm-hmm.
She'll balance that. based.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, it's almost like Myra has performing backstage.
You know, Mr. Dannenberg is now the dean of the conservatory of the man they had resigned, Robert Fountain, the choral man. He got all worked up during the riots, I think.
You mean Arthur Dan?
No. Emil Dannenberg.
Dannenberg, yes.
He was never my teacher, but I liked him and had him in some courses. And we were very good friends.
No, I don't think Lester's ever heard. The only thing you've ever heard was live
mm-hmm. Did he hear a little live thing?
Yes, but
one about
the wiring.
The wiring and the man who drove up in the red truck or something like that.
Yeah.
And got her there.
Overcharged or something. Well, I guess I better be going. I have to go home.
Well, I tell you what, let me just get a little package or two, and you can take. And then
sure.
If you are going home for a
sure,
second, you can just
sure.
Drop these.
Fine. I'll be glad to. I didn't have much opportunity to visit with them because they were out on the day.
This is from the Herbert's. This is my map.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess
I'll take that
on back. Shouldn't
I?
I
was sound asleep sitting out there.
Was rejected and put on it. You want me to take that on back, or?
You take it back and tell them give me a last recount. You do that, they don't care. They're not. I've been out last recounted in all this time. Hold that.
Well, you must be able to get those good maps of counties like they have in the county office.
Of course.
Is that what they call it? Looking at maps. They have a fascination.
Don't they?
Don't you think? I'm fine. Sometimes I'll look at a map and I'll realize it's 2 hours, you know, and I've just looked at the map. And I think it's just visual fascination. I don't think it really is a very meaningful sort of experience a lot of the time. You just get caught up with all the little colors and things. You're looking at a map of Africa, for example, and you get caught up with it. I don't really see what it's. You can see so little in a map, you know what I mean? If you actually go to the place. I know some of the places in Greece where we went, where we studied the maps in great detail before we went there, and then you get there and it just doesn't look like the map at all. You know, you just have to.
Well, I never gotten very far in using maps. I don't guess I haven't made too much of the maps. I always thought of the navigators, the few ones, you know, who
really use the maps.
Really could use the maps. And then when they followed the little maps, see, the whole thing came alive to them.
Mm-hmm.
They could see the experience. Well,
this minute. Let me tell you. Now this is the sort of thing that happens to us. This boy, he was gonna write about his experience,
mm-hmm.
and he was he took pictures, and he had all these beautiful and large pictures. They take them so large of the face, it's almost you know invasion of privacy, especially like this.
Mm-hmm.
On television. I think they ought to keep the camera
certain. Yes, out of respect for the human being,
yeah.
Yes.
They just play with it, don't they?
Yes.
and he went down to Tampa and some little fishing place down there where they fished. Everybody fished. He took these pictures of the old people. And that was his photographic trip. Now here's the thing. You've never seen them before.
Mm-hmm.
Now why do you want to take the pictures of somebody you've never seen before?
Yeah, it just doesn't make
sense. But it's like this, you see, on experience. It's the freshman, maybe the seniors too, experience to them is something they've never done before.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you ask them to give you some of their experiences, they'll tell you about something they know nothing about. So you get back to Ms. Rawlings across the creek, you see. She's talking about the people she's lived with 10, 15, 20 years. It's all familiar to her.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a long approach to her for them to appreciate that. And then, you see, if they apply to themselves, they'll write about something they know and then they'll run into what we've been talking about, to see that they know the people they know through the pappy. They don't actually know them. Or it's somebody they've seen at a distance, some character in the community, and they still don't know. And I have tried. You see, I don't have access to the catalog. I can't rewrite the university catalog.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't put a course in there, you see, that fits me. So I'm always taking whatever course they give me and then distorting it.
Mm-hmm.
And I get in trouble. Students don't like it a lot of times, so I had to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could, if I had access to it, if I say the freshmen understand that, you talk to them, they
mm-hmm.
do a reading, and I get a hold of some of them, if I could keep them 2 or 3 times, then I have to be old. They could sort of start doing that, and that's more than the adults can do.
Mm-hmm.
Is to look at that community and the people in it. They don't see them. And they associate people with opinions. You see, opinions are one of the most artificial things you have. So that doesn't happen much. And then you if you pursue it, you see, what you find yourself doing, you're looking for categories. You're looking for something that does mean something. Now you see, when we finally got Miss Daisy talking about her sister Lucy, she and her mama raised Lucy's boy. The thing of it was, Mr. Miles,
Miss Lucy married a seasoned man. She married a seasoned man. And she was mean, and she dwelled on his meanness after a long time. That's your categories. You hit something that counts. But you can't do it, you know, you never know. You have to listen a lot and shift a lot. And then if you can, if you can have it on tape and study it, a lot of times you see so much more. And then the next time you talk, you see, you start preparing. She's getting some for you to take with you.
Go over to the Herbert. Do you have a hippie commune next to you now? On the other side of your house? Or is that just...
Make an open.
No, over on 7th Place.
No, they don't like hippies. That's the reason they got that fence up.
Well, there's nothing but hippies in the yard the other day. Isn't that a hippie commune next to you now? Or do grown-ups still live in that house?
You mean with that
the
big
one
fence?
With the fence, yeah.
Oh, no, that's, they have a child who's blind.
A baby.
And they put that up to... To keep the hippies out, as a matter of fact.
Well, yesterday or the day before yesterday, there were about 15 of them in there. All working on their old cars and everything else.
Gosh, I hadn't thought about that. Maybe that's what it is.
They buy them, you know. They have their fathers come and buy a $75,000 house in Berkeley, and then they just move in and set up a commune. Hippies are, they lead the simple life, but they have firm backing. No, that's quite common. A friend of mine would like to buy a house in Santa Cruz, and he says you just can't do it. Every time one comes on the market, it'd be a $50,000 house. Somebody comes in from Los Angeles in a private plane and buys it for his son, who's a student at the university. And then the son will rent out the various rooms of the house to his friends and use that for spending money while he's in college, so the father doesn't have to pay anything for spending money. And he deducts the payments on the house from his income and makes money on it in the long run. Get some real estate. I mean, how can a professor buy a house in a town like that? I mean, you know, you just can't compete with that kind of thing.
How many rich people are?
And it was the fifth largest GNP, you see. There are some wealthy people in that state. Really, money counts for nothing to them.
He needs to go
pay. Yes, we won't hold him. But it's been so much fun. I can just sort of depend on it. Oh, you're not going to say it.
Yes, you do. You tell him. You
tell I'm not saying you do that yourself. I'm not getting in on that. I don't know nothing about that. I never saw a
map. Sure. been to a barber shop in several years. You see, I've got my private barber.
Mm-hmm. Is that she in there? Okay.
No, he lives over here.
Okay.
He's no barber.
Mm-hmm.
But he's you know, he just comes over here and gives me a haircut.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets so, and the older he gets, the shorter he cuts it.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't need it quite as short as he gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't been to a barber shop in so long. Can you get just any sort of haircut you want?
Well, most of the barber shops now, you go in and you see the men's hairstylist, and he shows you pictures, and you know, he looks at your hair. If you're having trouble with thinning hair in the front, as I am, and my father is bald, and I'm sure to go bald eventually, I guess. You know, he looks at your hair under a microscope and tells you to buy this and that and the other for it, and then you can have it styled. But basically, you still can't get the kind of haircut you want. Now, right now, I'd like to have my hair cut, but I don't want to come out looking like I have such short hair that, you know, they think I work for Xerox or something and can't have it any longer, or I just got out of the Army or something like that. You know, you see a man with real short hair in California, you know right away he's a military in civilian clothes, because nobody wears their hair short. Most people have their hair, you know, really long, way down. And I
most
like it.
Most people?
Most men do, yeah. The women have it whacked right off to the bone, but the men have it. Now, what I'd like to do is have all this sort of trimmed off and have this frizziness taken away. I don't like that very much. And then maybe just sort of evened off in the back. But you couldn't get that done for love or money. Because if you say to take anything off, they take out all their frustrations on all the heads that have come in and they haven't been able to cut anything off. So if you say take just a little off and you look a few minutes later, everything is gone. They just whack, just cut everything off.
So they don't barber as such. They're hairstyles.
They claim that they've become hairstyles. I think in many cases it's just the same old person. But the barbers realize that in order to keep going in a state where people were just literally not going to the barber anymore. Most of the kids with long hair, you know, just let it grow literally and don't do much to trim it, or they do it themselves. Most of my friends with long hair actually have it cut by their mothers. I have one friend that has real long hair and it's really very becoming to him. And when I got back from Greece, I thought it looked somewhat different. And I said, well, Steve, what did you do to your hair? Did you get a permanent or something? That doesn't seem quite the same. He said, oh no, I just had mother cut it. It's a shag cut. And that's what it was.
And that's more like what you want.
Not really. Mine's not long enough to call it that. I just want to have it trimmed sort of so that it's even on that side and take all this stuff that hangs over my ears away. But I don't want it to have, you know, I don't want the veins to show. Which is the way it will be if I go to the barber. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'll have to get some friend to do it, I guess.
Steve's mother can't.
Yes, maybe she's going to come up. She might be.
Well, I have much to thank you for.
Yes.
Well,
and you tell Litton that we haven't seen him, but we'd love to see him.
Okay.
It's time he's got on time.
Channel 2 right around 600-700. The end of the visit with Leslie. This Sunday, supper time, the 26th of December, 71. Channel 2 right around 600-700. And the end of the Channel 2 right around 600-700. And the end of the visit with Leslie. This Sunday night, 26th of December, 71. Channel 2 right, around 600-700. The end of the visit with Leslie this Sunday at supper time, the 26th of December, 71.
All right, I guess you'll stay.